it just dawned on me, and I don't know how we frame this, but I think it's interesting that the areas that we've covered, so the music industry, we obviously spent a lot of time and know that very well. And I'm reasonably well informed on how actors get their breaks and what they need to make the get their foot in the door. Actors very definitely need agents. There's no question in my experience that you really do struggle to get anywhere near the door, let alone your foot in it, without an agent. Young bands, young singers, it's not so. You know, you can get to first base and you can get, you know, quite a way without necessarily having a manager. And what I mean to say is, if you don't have a manager, that is not a barrier to entry. In fact, I would say some people might say it's a positive advantage not having some dick taking 20% as soon as you go.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. And I think a lot of the time, I see quite a lot of managers on TikTok and various other platforms complaining about the fact that they've been approached by someone who says, you know, I'm just, my career is starting to take off and I really need a manager. And what I want you to do is look after my socials and book my gigs and order me a car to take me to so-and-so. And actually, that's not really the role of management.
If I had a pound for every time I had an email from someone who wants to exploit their latest bit of notoriety, fame, or level of likes, I'd be a rich man, because what they actually want is to be more famous than they were yesterday. And so it's a real red flag to me when I get the emails of, can you exploit what I've been doing? No, the quick answer is no, and that's not really what we're in the game of doing.
We've touched on this before. I mean, I often get young up and coming composers coming to me saying, you know, I'm looking for management, an agent, or a publisher. It's usually one of those three, and or all three. And my first question is, what do you want from that? Because it's almost always more work. And actually, that's the one thing you probably are going to struggle to get. I mean, an agent or a manager, they're going to struggle to get you more work, even though theoretically an agent gets work. That's what they do. They can only get you work if you're getting work. They can't make something from nothing.
Well, that I think, well, you hit that on the head. You really can't make something from nothing. There's a terrible expression that used to go around the business, and it was polishing a turd. And I always and tried to visualize, and I just found the whole thing very, very terribly distressing. But no, you're absolutely right. You know, you have to do and be working. If you're working, the chances are you will get more work. If you're sat there doing nothing, there's probably a reason for that, very sadly. So I think that the decision about how, if you need a manager or an agent, how you go about that is something that we've spoken about, but
I think we probably need to go into more detail, because actually I do think there's still a lot of confusion, even amongst people who are doing quite well, about what it is they need a manager or an agent or both for. And as you quite rightly said at the beginning, this will vary depending on whether you're, you know, what discipline you're in, whether you're a solo artist, a songwriter, whether you're a band. And actually, we want to talk about, bands in more detail in a bit. So,
and on the subject of representation, this is sort of goes across the board that, writers, young writers, you will need the advice, because it's very complex and incredibly diverse business. Writing and the literary and publishing industry has become incredibly, incredibly diverse. And therefore, there are so many different parts of the business. It's not just fiction and nonfiction. It's a vast and somewhat of a minefield. But we can talk about that. And if people are more interested, they can always get in touch on the comments with their specific questions. I think it's a very interesting part of the business, especially when you're starting out. You are listening to Riding the Showbiz Wave with myself, John Fowler.
And me, Drew Masters.
Today, I think we're going to try and cover bands. We'll cover as much as we can, and there's a couple of comments that have come in. But I was interested in a statistic, which I'm going to get wrong. But in general terms, it's been a very, very long time since a band have had a number one record. in the UK. And when I say that people would be shouting, screaming, what about Oasis? What about the Beatles? Well, they don't count, quite frankly. I mean, new bands and bands in the traditional sense.
Well, and I think the point is that actually Oasis's triumphant return with their tour, which has been remarkable, has brought about this question of where are all the bands? Because, you know, they've done it. They've done really well. Obviously, it's renewed interest in their music and also brought it to a younger generation. But why is it that the bands seem to be struggling so much? And I was looking at TikTok particularly, because TikTok's such a valuable resource for getting your new music out there. But bands seem to really struggle with it in a way that I find, and it might just be what's on my feed, but I find singer-songwriters particularly, or dance artists, they seem to be able to use that medium. It's very visual, it's very immediate, it's a great way to connect. When you're a band, there's more of you, you take more physical space. I think, you know, there seem to be some just really basic, obvious barriers to connecting with your audience as a band on social media. And yet the reverse is true, that actually if you want to go and perform, you know, there are loads of small venues still, hopefully they're still surviving just about, where you can go and play live as a band. And it's actually quite a lot harder, I think, sometimes to do a singer-songwriter slot.
Well, it's something that we are trying to encourage as people who've been in this business a little while. And I'm, as you know, becoming associated doing things together. So if you have a band, and for all the wonderful things that will produce, it's quite hard to get everyone, especially if you've got a day job, in a room at the same time, and God forbid, to rehearse or demo something up and then to do social media. It's harder for bands, there's no question. And in terms of the mass media, if that's the right word, and platforms and places where bands can exist, in the UK, you know, if I'm not, you know, mistaken, it's tough. You know, which one of the major radio stations will play a rock song, you know, or a metal, heavy metal track through the day? Very, very few of them.
And it's interesting, I remember Radio 1, which obviously is still the main kind of focus. If you get a Radio 1 A list, you will probably have a hit record, because you'll be being played so often that you'll reach your audience.
Oh, you've got 100,000 hits.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember, you know, probably, I'm going to say 10 years ago, I'm just picking a slightly random number, but quite a while back, they started to shift away from, you know, more dance-based, beat-based music towards sort of trying to bring back rock and bands. And I remember when they did it, and I remember it just didn't sit very comfortably with all the other stuff they were playing. And it seems to have gone away again. I don't know quite what happened, but it was, I don't know if somebody just decided it wasn't working and it wasn't bringing in the audience, or it wasn't resonating with people. But it you know, even, you know, huge bands like Wolf Alice, you know, it's only when they do a not very rocky song that
I'm on radio.
Getting played on Radio 1.
Absolutely.
But certainly doing the data.
I think Wolf Alice are fantastic, but if I don't know the name, their most recent track, I don't think you could describe as rock. At the push, it might be rocky because they're a band.
Yeah,
I love them, actually, I have to say. But no, I must admit, I mean, where is the next, I say rock, but, you know, bands like Bon Jovi, Europe, you know, where are these?
But even slightly, you know, more, you know, British indie kind of, you know, thinking the Manic Street Preachers, all those sorts of bands, where are they? I'm sure they exist, and I'm sure they're playing gigs, and I'm sure they're playing festivals, and they're doing well. They're not getting a lot of airplay, and I'm not seeing them on TikTok and socials. I'm sure they're posting, but it's not turning up on my feed, and it's not for want of looking. And when they do turn up, I often think you've really got the medium wrong. You've started with like some big noise, or, you know, you haven't done, I think you need to,
let's just
lure people in with your content, and it's, I don't think the bands always get it.
Well, that's a really interesting, dwell on it for a minute. How does a rock band get across in, what are you talking about, 15 seconds? Well, in terms of personality, hook, lyric or what, I mean, that's hard. And I feel for these guys, you know, I'm, you know, working with a rock band, you know, three guitars and a set of drums. And I think they're absolutely fantastic, but I'm feeling and experiencing the challenges.
So I'm becoming more and more brutal with my kind of TikTok habits because I'm spending a lot of time on there at the moment. And I find you've got to hook me immediately. And so I saw someone, and I think this may be a bit of a trend because I've seen it a few times now, but I saw someone yesterday, I think it was, and they posted and they said, you know, can you give me 10 seconds to, you know, to see if you like my song? And I think there was a sort of, if you spend 30 seconds doing this, surely you can spend 10 seconds, you know, listening to this music. And I gave them the benefit of the doubt. They'd come in with what I guess is sort of like the instrumental break in the middle of the song. Maybe it was the intro, maybe it was a break in the middle. It wasn't grabbing me, but I gave them the benefit of the doubt. I gave them their 10 seconds and it cut into another section of the song. It was good. It was really good. But that was me. On that day, I waited. Why didn't they just come in with that bit of the song? That bit of the song was great. I mean, I don't know that they knew that. I don't think that's why they were asking you to wait 10 seconds because the first bit was shit. I think they did it because they thought it was all good, but it actually wasn't. It was, and I mean, it's very difficult to decide what's the good bit of the song.
I don't know how sensitive your sound, your microphones are, but my heart has just sunk to the depths when we are now discussing samples of 10 seconds. Now, I would love to
know. Don't bore us, get to the chorus.
Don't bore us, get to the chorus. I mean, I just want to throw myself.
And ironically, sorry to interrupt you, but just ironically, a lot of advice that I hear from people on, you know, giving advice to bands on TikTok specifically, and which I also totally agree with, is that the chorus isn't always the best thing to post. Actually, it's often better to post the verse. Get people in with a sort of the more intimate storytelling of your song and let them seek out the chorus, because when they come to that, you know, you haven't just given away the best bit of the song.
It's interesting, and I would love to hear comments and whether we are deluded in our notion that it's a quick hit otherwise you would, but I suspect we may be right. I mean, people will, I think, find great amusement that two old farts like you and I are explaining the do's and don'ts on social media. Well, you know, sadly, we have to spend a lot of time on social media discovering these do's and don'ts. And I'm pretty...
The reason that we're qualified to do that is, you know, because obviously we're not, you know, the target audience, nor, you know, or maybe we are. I think TikTok will take any audience. But, you know, it's certainly not for necessarily the bands who are posting or the artists that are posting. But the one thing we have is, you know, 40 years each of experience of knowing, of having good taste and knowing what's good and knowing when something grabs you immediately. When someone's got something special or a song's got something special, we know it because we've heard it a lot of times.
I wonder, and again, you know me better than I'm a terrible old fashioned type of guy, but I do think, and I still, when I hear an intro to a track that I know and is exciting, and there's always that which gets me into a track. You know, I won't reel off all the tracks with fabulous intros, but my goodness me, it is important. I think maybe that's a parallel in today's universe, that you grab your 10 seconds, and if you're not into it, you move on. God, it's a heartbreaking industry.
It can be. I mean, you know, there is nothing wrong, obviously, with longer content that slow burns, that, you know, draws you in slowly and has depth to it. But TikTok might not be the right platform for that. You know, the question is, can you... I mean, I've seen Max Richter posting on TikTok. You know, his stuff is not kind of like straight to the chorus. You wouldn't think that he would do that well on a platform like that. He does, because there is an audience for his music. He's a great composer. People love his work. And, you know, if our listeners don't know his work, check it out. It's fantastic. And he works on TikTok despite not being... you know, in your face, you know, full visuals. It's all just very relaxing, whatever. But it's a moment of calm. in, you know, amongst all the other madness. It sticks out. It's, you know, he's beautifully written, beautifully crafted within two chords. You know, if you like it. And this is, you know, what differentiates what's good and what's not good. And, you know, it's hard to do that, but it's the equivalent of the single. You know, the single on an album didn't mean that the album was necessarily full of big, you know, hard hitting singles. You know, it could have its moments of highs and lows. It could have moments of calm. It could be a journey. But the single was the thing that you used to promote it, because it was the thing that was going to hook you on the radio quickly. And it's the same thing with TikTok. It's like a little snapshot, and you've got to find the hook. It doesn't mean that all your work has to be like that.
There's a Usain Dur track called 7 Seconds I'm thinking of at the moment. Well, he was forward thinking. There is a very cyclical nature to this business, and I'm sure there are some fantastic young bands out there. But I do have sympathy with how they get noticed and how they get the leg up and then ultimately to gigs. I mean, we touched on it. There is an amazing amount of venues just crying out to be filled. I mean, I know that these venues obviously are empty a lot of the time. And that's great sadness. And, you know, bands need to rehearse. And I think more effort should be made by venues.
I mean, that said, the venues where we are in London, I mean, they are, well, you're not in London, but I am. They're packed every night. I mean, in fact, you can't get tickets half the time. You know, it's crazy. You know, we're going to see Must Be John, who's a new artist that, you know, we found on TikTok. Love his work, love his stuff. He's connecting really well with his very simple, like fairly homemade visuals. Hard to know, you know, but they certainly look relatable. Mm-hmm. And he's playing locally. We're going to go and see him because we'll probably be the oldest people there by miles. But it's, you know, it's exciting. It's new music. He's going to be playing with a band, although he is, I think, more of a solo artist with a band for gigging. But it's, you know, the venues exist. They, you know, the audience exists.
As far as venues are concerned, out of town, which a lot of, you know, our listener may live in the sticks, your nearest town will have a live venue. We touched on it before.
We've got a lot of listeners around the world. It's really interesting looking at the great thing about, you know, the digital age is I can see all the stats of where everyone is. And we've got people all over the place. People in Morocco, Spain.
Well, I don't
Germany.
I don't know if there's a spit and sawdust venue in Morocco, but I can guarantee that most places will have a live music pub, and that live music pub will have an open mic night at least once every 2 weeks.
I bet there's plenty of live venues, you know, all over where our listeners are. I mean, I think it's the big cities are slightly more problematic because real estate's so expensive. You know, they need to fill these venues with a lot of people paying a lot of money, and that's not always easy if you're new bands. Mm. You know, so I guess it's probably harder in big cities in some respects, possibly a bit easier if you're out in the sticks. But then it's harder to grow a wider audience, and that's where socials come in.
I think a parallel would be, you know, by all means, you know, spend some time looking at your socials, but get out. Go to the gigs, go to the venues.
You mentioned earlier the cyclical nature of things, and I think you're absolutely right. You know, the cycles are perhaps slightly longer than people think. You know, I remember when I was trying to get signed with my band back in the early 90s, we ended up getting signed mid-90s. We were really just infatuated with the 80s. We loved the big 80s sound, which had gone by the early 90s. And it was, you know, it was dance music, and then it went into the indie stuff. And, you know, that was, and Britpop, of course, and we were totally off that wave. You know, we wanted to bring back the glamour and opulence of the 80s. It was way too soon. And I mean, I think we knew that then, but it was just who we were. And I think it was good that we were authentic. We failed authentically. But it, you know, it was 10 years earlier, not even. And it's just too soon. You need that sort of 20 years. If you look at Britpop, I was looking back to, you know, almost the 60s, early 70s. It's a 20-year cycle generally. And you were telling me before that the last time there was a rock song at number one on the Billboard charts was 2001, Nickelback. And that's in a country that is kind of known for rock music.
Well, the difference in that was, that is that the US market was so vast, you could have a rock radio, a rock chart all on its own and existed, as did college music, as did alternative music, as did Mariah and Ricky and all the other beautiful Madonna and all the beautiful pop artists, you know, chart music. They existed on their own. If you had a crossover hit, wow, that was fantastic, because you had urban R&B. So America was fine and could deliver college tours in huge numbers and rock bands in huge numbers. And those rock bands crossed over into that. That's a long time ago. 2001 is, what, 25 years ago.
So what happened? Did people grow out of rock? Did it become old-fashioned? Or is it just, I mean, that rock bands still exist, but then kids still make rock music. So that sort of suggests that isn't what happened.
My simple view, and it's really with everything that goes out of favors, because you need your idols, you need your rock stars, and that's where the term comes from. Hey, he's a rock star, whatever. And I don't know, when was the last great rock star?
It's a really good point. And I mean Liam Gallagher probably.
Yeah, but I don't Oasis to me are not a rock band. I mean no offense by saying this, but they're kind of more of a cultural phenomena in a way, especially now.
And that's why it's so exciting. It's interesting what you're saying, because all of our conversations sort of come back to the same thing about people and personality.
Yeah, people buy into personality.
And this is why social media is so useful, because it's a perfect way.
And if you ain't got a personality,
it's not a personality, it's tricky.
Yeah.
Or if your personality is not very pleasant. I mean, yeah. Okay, let's move on from that. So we had quite a few irate comments about our comparison of Lola Young and Ray last time. And it's quite interesting, because I hadn't really thought about how the little clips from the podcast would be perceived outside of the context of the longer conversation we've been having.
It was a wider conversation about management and how they'd... In some regards, a similar trajectory. In some regards,
I think they're very similar in some ways.
Yeah,
they are both young female singer-songwriters. You know, they write their own songs, they sing, they perform. They're both at sort of similar levels in terms of the kind of venues they're playing. That's the amount of work they're doing right now.
Well, I think the question that was asked was, "Are we judging them?" And we're not. And this is by no means, I'm not excusing anything we say, because I think that everything that we've said is absolutely on message and quite brilliant. But, yeah, of course, they're different artists. And actually, I mean, I think that Lola Young is, I think, still got the single of the year so far, in my mind. It's such a great record.
I can't get that Ray song out of my head. Well, whereas my husband, I did literally... My entire life is soundtracked by that song at the moment. It's driving me mad.
Which is fantastic. And that's exactly why we do what we do. Because we can't get it out of your head.
And we're huge fans of music. Yeah. And we wouldn't bother to talk about someone that we weren't a massive fan of.
And on that subject of not getting it out of your head, we should also touch on soap to song, soap opera to singer, which I've got a great deal of experience in. Yeah. We'd forgotten all about that.
I had actually forgotten that. Kylie is so iconic as a singer and a performer that I had completely forgotten that she had been an actress.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one, you are absolutely entitled to do that, because she's so wonderful and so iconic.
What might we talk about next time? Obviously, we don't know what comments we'll get in, but it's the awards season now. Certainly, the BAFTAs have started being released to BAFTA members, which I'm lucky enough to count myself as. And so that means lots of things to watch, but also quite a responsibility. I take the responsibility quite seriously to make sure that I watch as many of them as possible, which can be quite grueling.
So... next time, we should possibly talk about award seasons, awards in general. What do they mean?
I think this was a really interesting conversation. I'm actually very involved. As you know, I'm on the Ivors Academy board, and we are at the moment looking at some of our honours awards. And shifting the focus towards different areas of the business. But in doing that, I've been talking to a lot of people who want us to have certain types of awards and trying to understand why. Because as you say, it's like, what is it, just a shiny trophy? Or, you know, is there something deeper?
The Brits were to drag the music industry out of the doldrums of January. And so it was a really, well, just a sales and marketing institution. And, you know, very successful it was too.
It's really interesting. I think we should talk about the whole sort of system of awards, because the awards societies themselves are often very self-serving. That's not quite the right word. They're
exposed to just patting ourselves on the back.
Yeah, and also, but also they are businesses in themselves, and they have to sell tables and, you know, to pay for and raise funds to pay for the awards. It's not just an altruistic, hey, here's an award because you're brilliant. There's a whole industry going on there. You've been listening to Riding the Showbiz Wave with me, Drew Masters.
And me, John Fowler. So join us next time for more fun observations. We will hopefully be answering your queries, but above all, having a lighthearted conversation about the business of show.